Blog Talk Radio.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit, get out of debt, and build true financial independence with real estate in 1 hour a week. Tune in to Unlock Your Wealth Radio with Heather Wagner. She'll show you how without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagner.
Welcome to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Good very Saturday morning to you all. This is Heather Wagenhals, and you are listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio for Saturday, this fabulous money, May 2nd. We are broadcasting live from the HQ Real Estate and Investment Offices in Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm so excited. We have a special studio guest today, and I just wanted to bring attention to it because we won't see her next week for Mother's Day, but I did want to give a very special hello and welcome to Jane DeGelke, who is our News by the Numbers correspondent, Karen Groom's mother. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy as we all bring you an incredible show this week. We are now on the fourth key in the Keys to Riches series. Our financial literacy month is over, so I was wondering if any of you had successfully tried any of the tips or techniques that we brought forth this past month. I know that some of you took the time to sign up with Sharon Lecter and follow her daily money tips for the financial literacy month. She was our guest, if you recall, from the first key of acceptance and affirmation, and she helped us to kick off Financial Literacy Month. And I must add, I am slightly envious of her because she got to ring the bell on the stock exchange. And that, as a former trader myself, I've always thought that that would just be the coolest thing, and she got to do it. So I have to say that now she's the second person I know that's been on Wall Street and gotten to ring the bell. Last week, my husband joined us for our Dreams with Deadlines segment. He's happily off in Hong Kong creating more business opportunities for people. But he also got to ring the bell. So I'm working hard. Hopefully someday somebody will pick me. Pick me! Pick me! I want to ring the bell. Things we have in store for you this week on the show. I am so excited. We have a neurolinguistic master practitioner, Michael Burnoff, who has worked with one of the originators, Bandler, of neurolinguistic programming, and he is going to help us implement those goals that we have so worked hard to construct. And with his program that he has, his call to action program, which is transformation through action, we are going to add to your toolbox some more ways for you to help set and accomplish those financial goals that have been elusive all these years and help you to achieve financial independence. This week's key is knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful. And for our nuts and bolts segment this week, we're going to talk specifically about how we focus on our strengths and acknowledge and delegate our weaknesses. One of the things that we have learned through neurolinguistic programming in this show is that what you resist persists, and it is ever present in many areas of your life, just not your financial life. And when you ignore those bills, they pile up. When you ignore your deficiencies or your weaknesses, they don't just go away. They seem to manifest into something larger and even more unmanageable than what they were to begin with had you just dealt with them. So today in Nuts and Bolts, we are going to talk about how do we effectively identify what our strengths and weaknesses are and what we can do to turn those weaknesses around. So that'll be in our Nuts and Bolts segment. I'm so excited to bring you in our Investor's Edge segment, a green investment segment. And you're going, what? Green? Yes, the whole world is going green, and nonetheless, this show too. So we're going to have special guest Richard Reinke on, and he is going to talk about his green industrial park that his company is building. They've got a lot of neat things in the on the horizon. And for those of you that are environmentally conscious, want your dollars to mean more than just money back to you, if you want to make a difference as well as make money, investing has become not just a buzzword, but it looks like this time around it may stick. I know we tried a green initiative in the 70s, and it didn't quite work out. We have a completely failed governmental department called the Department of Energy that now, 30-some years later since it was created, we're no closer to accomplishing our dependency on foreign oil. That's what the Department of Energy was created for. So many people don't even know that. They have no idea what the Department of Energy is. For all they know, that they think it just could be nuclear experimentation. But it was actually created to reduce our dependency on foreign oil, and not only has it not done that, but it's created an entire bureaucracy in and of itself of billions of dollars every year that we don't know what it's going to. But as the government is famous for doing, making mandates, which is kind of like a directive that you have to follow, but without funding or financing to accomplish it. So as these directives are starting to come down, businesses are faced with, what do I do to get there? And the real estate industry is no less accountable to some of these new mandates. So we're going to discuss what going green means for investors, what going green means in not only just, you know, construction products, but how do you get a green project going? And how do you participate if that's something that you're interested in? So Richard Reinke is going to be with us. He's the CEO of Green Wind Solar. They've got a lot of neat things, gadgets and stuff, in addition to alternative energy products. So we could talk about all of that today with the Investor's Edge segment. As always, we will have our ever-popular News by the Numbers with our segment host, Karen Gurm, who has her own studio audience on her side of the studio. Again, her mom came in to join us this week, so we're pretty tickled about that. And then we have the key, and we will talk in depth about the key. And as always, in our key segment, we not only discuss the key, but we give you tools to implement this week's key with our key statement, key affirmation, and key action item. I have some great topics for you this week on minutes on your money. Some are kind of funny, I think. And so we got some neat stories. We also are going to talk about different tools for you with credit cards and also in minutes with your money. We are also going to have a quick guide to credit cards and something fun, 10 financial urban legends. So I'm totally tickled and I'm really excited about this week's broadcast. But I believe we have our next segment coming right up. It appears that Mr. Burnoff is with us already. So let me continue our broadcast. And I want to give you just a little bit of background about Michael before I bring him on. During the past decade, he has been instrumental in dramatically enhancing the quality of thousands of lives. He's the president and founder of the Human Communications Institute. He is a leader in the personal and professional development industry. He works directly with individuals as well as corporate executives who desire to transform their corporate culture in an ever-changing marketplace. His passion for work is limitless, and his dedication to positively impacting the world by empowering every individual is uncompromising. And that will also translate into today's broadcast. You are just going to be so excited when you hear this man's energy and enthusiasm, I know when I first spoke to him, and then I got to participate in a couple of his teleseminars and have read through some of his materials, I was just blown away. So I know that you will be too. So let me welcome Michael Burnoff to the show. Welcome, Michael. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Oh, you sound fabulous. You
Fantastic.
Have a wonderful
Another,
voice.
What's that now?
I said you have a wonderful voice.
I appreciate that. When you speak for a living, that's what you do. You have to make sure to take care of your voice. So I want to thank you for that as well. And I'm excited. I was listening to what you said earlier. What a good outcome. What a good goal for people to have to get out there to the stock exchange and get an opportunity to ring the bell. That's financial freedom in itself, just to be able to do that.
I was a trader when I was 22, 23. I was just a young pup. I was a kid from the 80s, and so Wall Street, the movie, was kind of my motivator, and Gordon Gekko, Greed is Good. I was all about power lunches and million-dollar deals. Once I got into the industry, though, I was so disappointed because then it was all about being a telemarketer. I'm like, what? I'm a glorified telemarketer? What happened to my power lunches? Where are my multi-million-dollar deals? And I was like, oh, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And then I figured out, oh, the way to go is financial advising. And then that's actually what kind of set me on this path that I'm on now, is that, you know, through being able to create a financial horizon, an investment horizon for people and helping them meet those goals. And then when I went into mortgages and then real estate, I saw where the stopgap was as to why people weren't achieving their goals. And a lot of it was self-sabotage. A lot of it was ineffective goal setting, or just not having a plan, not knowing where to go. Last week, we focused on dreams with deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite things that really inspired me in my 20s was when I went and I watched Tom Hopkins speak, and he had this profile for success that he would do, this great training program. And he's the one that said, dreams are dreams and goals are goals. And the only difference between the two is goals are dreams with deadlines. And I loved how he positioned that. So it made me feel like, wow, if I can dream it, I can do it. And then with the tools that he gave everybody, it really helped you figure out where the stopgap was in your goal setting and goal planning. And I know I've been using some of your materials, and I've just been so impressed with the way you communicate with people, and I've listened to your teleseminars, and when people ask questions, and you just, like, you dig to find out what their core issue is, and then you just hold their feet to the fire. But not only do you hold their feet to the fire and give them accountability, but you make them make the decision and create that first step. So you don't just, like, get them all fired up and then leave them alone. You actually make sure that they have that first step ready to go. What will you do first? And I thought that was so great about your technique. And so I was wondering if you could just share a little bit about your background, more than just the blurb that I read about
Sure.
you, and tell us how you created your call to action program.
Well, it's very interesting. A lot of times people think there's a big, big story behind a lot of stuff. You know, how'd you come up with this? Well, I was doing training, doing coaching, working with people, and doing a lot of results coaching. I separated myself from the life coaching community a long time ago when I decided I'm going to just go get results and not just talk to people about their lives. And I had a gentleman that asked me to speak on a call very similar to this, and he said, hey, Mike, at the end of the call, what is your call to action going to be? And I said, well, that's a great name. I'll just call it Call to Action. So I decided to take the, you know, five best things that I had in our coaching program, and I created a teleseminar called Call to Action. And the beautiful thing about that is that I have noticed that, I know we're going to discuss goal setting here today, but I just want to talk about the entire self-development movement, the entire self-development industry. You mentioned Tom, and Tom was one of my mentors in the early years, and a lot of these other speakers. But what's interesting is there is a major, major flaw in the self-development, the self-help book industry. And that is that most people, they go to a seminar, they get fired up, they get excited, they hear a speaker, they watch a TV show, whatever it is, they get so inspired, they go back to their life, and nothing's changed. And I said to myself, and I'm sure you've experienced that too, am I correct?
Oh.
I mean, we've all had that happen. And my question is, is that, is it worth continually going to these things, reading these things, getting inspired, and all of it withering away over a course of a day, a week, a month, or a year? And we decided to put something together that people could get long-lasting change, where they could get an experience, they could be held accountable to what they say they want, but also not just walk people away with a feeling, allow them to walk away with some techniques, some tools, some strategies that allow them to grow. My background is in communication. The code word for it is neuro-linguistic programming. I've dedicated the last decade of my life to learning how to explain things to people with my words, with my language, with my communication seminars, teleseminars, audios, and other book products that we have in a way to make sure that they get it now. So it's not the type of thing where someone, you know, has to think about it, wait, and contemplate. Someone could come with a challenge, and you've heard us do this thousands of times before on our calls, where somebody comes to us with a matter of seconds and has a challenge, whether it's financial, mental, emotional, physical, something bothering them forever, and within a matter of 10 to 15 minutes, we can figure out what it is, dissect it, forget about why it happened, that doesn't matter, rename it, relabel it, and send them out the door with a new strategy or technique how to deal with that. And it especially works great with people that are in business for themselves, with financial crisis, people that are having challenges mentally and emotionally. And I know for an absolute fact that everyone here listening to this line right now would love to get to the point where you can say, that's great, I know I've lived this way a little bit too long, I'm going to change this now. And one thing I'm going to share with you guys today here on the call is going to be revolutionary. It's what we spoke about the other day. And Heather and I had spoken about what it takes to really get your goals and really make them work. Because I truly believe that the industry has misled people for a very, very long time on what it takes to get goals. And still the masses, 97% of the world will never get goals doing it the way that 97% of the trainers, speakers, and coaches are teaching them, because your brains don't operate in the mechanism that they're teaching you. So if that explains a little more of what I do, I don't usually like take a lot of time talking about myself, yet I know for a fact that I have a lot of information that I can share today that would be revolutionary to everybody.
Well, you know, and that's why I like your style so much more than others. And that's the thing that drew me to neurolinguistic programming. I always, as a child, our neighbor would give us their large print Reader's Digest as a kid. And I would always sit and read those back issues, and I loved Enrich Your Word Power. And, I remember as a kid, I'd always try to use the biggest words that I could. And people say, hey, why do you have to use such big words? And I would always say, I'm not using big words. I'm using the word that most appropriately describes what I'm trying to convey to you. And I'd always found that words meant so much more. And yet I would go to these seminars, and I was a total junkie. I could tell you, gosh, thousands of dollars. And all I was ever looking for out of that was one new tool for my toolbox. And a warm, fuzzy feeling was not a tool. And, yeah, I'm glad that, like, your words made me feel good, but what are you going to give me to walk away with? And that was one of my commitments when the Keys to Riches started to evolve for me. As I was creating these phrases, is I just, I wanted to have concepts that people could embrace. But what sets me apart from some of that other stuff, some of those stories, is that I give you specific techniques to overcome these issues. And that's what you need to be able to create change and lasting change. You know, not everybody has the answer, and that's okay. But you need to have the ability to change, and you can't do that with a warm fuzzy. Got to have a technique. And so that's one of the things that I really enjoy about your program. And because you've committed yourself to neurolinguistic programming and word change, I love your new vocabulary, by the way.
Isn't that amazing? That's the simple program. We put that together. I've had that about 8 years in the making. Put that together very quickly. And folks out there that have an idea or a plan or something out there and you know you can do it, we've had that for 8 years, thinking about putting this little program together, this one CD, to teach people 20 words to make anybody say yes, another word to get anybody to communicate with you, and they work great on yourself. What words to avoid? I've had this whole idea. I came up with the idea, and Deborah had come up with the idea of Your New Vocabulary as a name, and we came up with this concept, and what was interesting was 8 years took 8 hours to produce, and the most interesting thing about it is we get more kudos and people getting results financially, mentally, and emotionally with themselves off one thing that I've been holding in my brain for 8 years, and all I did is said, made a decision one day, said, I'm going to just get it out of my head, I'm going to put it on, go to the studio. I'm going to go into the studio and record this. And it was so interesting that, you know, 8 or 10 hours later after editing, we sent it off, and I never knew the impact it was going to have. That has been the top product that we've had up till now. We've had some great material, but that one people have been really, really enjoying because it's just one CD. It's real easy to use. So it's very, very powerful. And I can see where I got something real cool that I'm going to be able to share with you guys here in a few minutes that I know for a fact can assist you. So forgive me cutting you off right there. I just wanted to just share that little tidbit because I know for a fact a lot of you have ideas and things in your head that you just got to get out, make a decision, and go do because it's not helping anybody in your brain. You got to get it out of your brain, get it on paper, and go do it.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say in – because I know you have that great – journal and workbook in that big Transform Your Life package.
Sure.
What would be the first thing that you would have people do when you would either meet with them or on the teleseminars? How would you get them to start thinking about their goals?
Well, this is the first thing. I'd love to just, if I could take a couple of minutes right now, if it's okay, to just take a few minutes right now and just share a little bit of my belief, and it could be my hallucination. I have no idea if what I'm about to share with you is true or not. And folks, I wouldn't encourage you to listen to anything I'm about to say. I wouldn't take anything I have to say and listen to it. Only listen to what you like, what I'm about to say, but everything I'm about to share with you, you're going to notice is going to be extremely true when it comes down to your own life. So do you mind if I just go ahead and take a couple seconds and just share that concept of really what it takes to set a goal correctly?
Yes.
Okay, you'd like me to go do that? Okay.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Go ahead.
One of the reasons why I wanted you on the broadcast is because you're not conventional and you're controversial. So I like your style. So just let loose because everybody
I'm
is looking
do
for
that.
Something
Folks,
different.
Folks, let me just tell you real quick. We have all been lied to. I'm just going to get very blunt and to the point. We've all been told that knowledge is power. We've all been told the more you know, the more you get. Yet until you can understand how to operate yourself effectively, you're not going to get where you want to go. And most school systems in this North America, what they're teaching right now is they're teaching people logical information. Yet it doesn't take walking down any street corner to realize that we are all emotional human beings. And when it comes down to goal setting and it comes down to getting what you want, I teach in my large events that we have something called multiple personalities. I'm not going to get into that today. But if you don't keep all of your personalities happy, the fun one, the crazy one, the one that's, you know, logical, if you don't keep all of these different pieces of you, the people please are happy when it comes to your goals, one of the parts you are going to sabotage yourself or you're going to operate from a program that doesn't work. But the big thing that I want to share with everybody here today, and I'm going to take a couple of minutes laying this out, and this is very crucial for you to now understand because the biggest thing is most people have been told, go get your goals. Now, I don't know if you know this, but the majority of society today, we are not motivated in the same way that we think we're motivated. There are two reasons people change. Yet, in order to get lasting change, two things have to occur. And every event that I do, every seminar that we do, I've realized that I have two outcomes in mind. If I don't get these two things in that short or long period of time together, people are never going to get lasting change. It requires repetition. You got to do things over and over again. And the second thing it requires is what's called a peak emotional experience. What a peak emotional experience is, it doesn't matter if you win the lottery, you're raped, molested, abused, whatever happens, something great happens, your dad says I'm proud of you, something peak emotional, whether it gets you excited or makes you extremely mad. What I know for an absolute fact is if you don't have one of those, you're not going to get jarred enough to make the changes to really hit your goals. All goal setting is a series of ways to actually motivate yourself. Now, I know that word motivation has a strange image for many of you in your head of a man jumping up and down, somebody excited, someone looks like, they're just hyper, they have ADD, whatever you want to call it. Yet motivation is truly the ability to get yourself to take action. Now, a few minutes ago when I said that we're all lied to, we were told knowledge is power. What I want all of you to grasp here today is knowledge is power when applied and when you learn how to operate yourself in an emotional way. Let me give all of you an interesting example of this for just a second. If I were to line up 100 people, and from all walks of life, all races, ethnicities, creeds, heights, sizes, sexes, no matter what it is their beliefs were, and I lined up 100 of them in front of you right now, and I told every one of them, go get your goals. Just go get them. Go out there, go get your goals. You can do it. Go get them. And I let them do whatever they needed, And the majority of the people, I'd say about 100 out of 100, pretty much everybody, would go out there, they'd write down their goals, they'd go watch movies like The Secret, they'd get all excited, inspired, Law of Attraction, you know, rub crystals, whatever it did to get them excited. And what would happen is about 6 months later, let's say, I'd come back and I'd talk to all those people. I'd say, did you guys get your goals? Now, every one of the people did the same thing, but less than 3% of the people would actually have their goals. So I'd find out what the 3% did, and I'd take the 3%, and I'd say, what'd you guys do? And they'd say, we wrote down these goals, we rubbed these crystals, we lit these candles, we said this, we hymned this, this is what we did. I said, great, let's go teach it to the other 97 people. So the 3% and I, we go do it, we're going to teach them, we're grinding it down their throats, we're pouring it, we're making them drink the Kool-Aid, we're saying, drink it, do it, injecting it in them. I'll see you in 6 months, let's go do it. Well, 6 months later, less than a half of a more person, so not even another full person, still only three and a half out of 100 people still would get their goals. Now, this made me mad for a long time. I was one of these people. I couldn't figure it out. I wrote the goals. I did the thing. I said I was going to do it. I couldn't figure out what was going on. I followed exactly what they said. Well, here's a very good metaphor. I am a very, very not good golfer. And the reason why I'm not a good golfer is I don't practice it. Now, I'm a righty. And if you were to hand me a left-handed golf club, how well would I play? Well, let me ask you that question. If you're a lefty and I hand you a right-handed golf club, will you play well? Well, probably not. And here's why.
No, that's not the right question.
What's that?
I'm a lefty that plays right-handed golf.
You're a lefty that plays right-handed, but you've also taught yourself how to do that, right?
But well, my grandfather was a pro golfer, and he said that I would play better since I was a lefty, but if I played right.
But here's the deal. That's what worked for you, right? But if I were to take everyone else out there on this call, you are one in a gazillion. Am I right?
Yeah, I just wanted to stir things up for you.
I understand you can stir things up, but let me ask you a question. If you've been playing righty your whole life and I hand you a left-handed club, how well are you going to play that day?
Oh, kind of crappy.
Not kind of crappy. The club's on the wrong side.
Yeah.
Okay? It's wrong. If I hand you a bowling ball made for a righty and you're a lefty and it's designed incorrectly, you're not going to get where you want. It's like putting the right foot and the left foot, putting the wrong shoe on the wrong foot. So why I'm bringing this up to you is that most people are not motivating themselves and to get their goals correctly. So let me share this little concept with you real quick for just a second. When it comes down to getting what you want, there are two reasons why people don't get what they want. There's two very simple reasons, and it comes down to two things that people do backwards. Most people in this world are motivated by one of two things. Well, actually, everybody is. It's inspiration and desperation. Inspiration means knowing enough that you can and caring enough that you want to. Now, everyone listening to this right now, I'd like you to yourself answer this question. How many of you know what it takes, do you know what it takes, to make more money if you wanted to at your job? Most people would say, well, yes. Well, most people, you know, do you know what it takes to be in better shape than you're currently in? And the majority of the people will say, well, yes. And then I'd ask the next question. Most of you, do most people know what it takes to have a better relationship than the one you currently have if you wanted to? And the majority of people would say yes. Then the next question I would ask is, how many of you are doing this consistently? And most people would say, well, not me. So just knowing to do it isn't enough. So there's two things that motivate us. There's inspiration and there's desperation. Yet goal setting has always been aligned with inspiration, inspiring yourself. Here's the sad truth. 97% of the world is not motivated by inspiration. They're motivated by desperation. This is why when
you're
the IRS
so right.
gives you a date to pay them, let me ask you, when do most people send their taxes in that pay a regular wage? When do they send it in? What day?
That would be April 15th, my friend.
April 15th, and they find a post office, and hopefully they get
midnight.
It out the 16th. Or midnight, right? Or maybe the 16th, they go backdate their stamps.com account, right? Or,
there you go. That's a clever idea.
Okay. Or maybe they, you know, but no one's getting up January 1st. They're inspired to go get their refund or whatever it is. People are motivated by pain. And it's a sad truth, and I hate to say it is the way it is. And people say, well, Mike, that's kind of negative. But let me tell you something, folks. I don't work with things the way I'd like them to be. I work with things the way it is. And when I teach marketing and to direct salespeople, I always teach them that forget about the way it should be. There is the way it is. So when it comes down to goal setting, you have to align yourself with two things. What is going to be, what am I want? What are my goals? How great is it going to feel? And the other thing you have to set up for yourself is, what if I don't do it? What would be the pain if I don't make it work? And I know for an absolute fact, if people that align that correctly, like Bill Gates, I'm telling you, somewhere in his brain has some trigger that says, here's what I want, but if I don't work today, here's how I'll feel, and immediately trigger something in his brain. You take Donald Trump or any of these other people, I've read their biographies, they are motivated by pleasure and pain combined. And if we don't put these two things together, I'm telling you, you're never going to learn how to get your goals, because I know for an absolute fact that the majority of people listening to this right now, you will do exactly what you have to do when you have to, not just because you want to. What I need to show you how to do is make it a have to now instead of making it a want to now.
That's so true, because, you know, one of the things that people always ask my husband, and he in 8 years built a company, a publicly traded company, from zero to $400 million a year in sales, and they always say, well, how did you keep going? And he was just so afraid that once he got there, he was going to lose it, so he had to get up and fight again the next day.
Isn't that amazing? And after a while, you can train yourself to adjust this, but I know that if you take an example of an average person's life, anybody's life, what makes you do what you need to do? Like if you're in business for yourself or you're in a relationship or you were smart enough to get out of one that wasn't working for you, what makes you start a business? Well, you know, what makes someone go into business for themselves? Did the boss just give them a $1 million raise? Did they just
Probably
get a
not.
Promotion? Did they just get kudos, tap on the back, say, man, I'm so proud of you? No. You know, you were pissed off. You had a problem, right? You said to yourself, this is making me mad, right? And you decided
right.
do something different, like a relationship. You're in a bad one for 5-6 years. What motivates you to get out? You finally get fed up enough. I'm going to tell you, folks, you have to realize this is not the way you'd like it to be. It is the way it is. So when it comes down to goal setting, you have to make sure you understand what I'm sharing with you, because indirectly, most people are doing this. They may not realize they are. You are motivated. You are motivated by what if I don't when you do.
Yes, one of my favorite sayings is people don't change until the pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same.
Mm-hmm. And if
and
they
until they get super uncomfortable.
That's what gets you to do things. I mean, that's what gets you to move. That's what gets you to never do that again. You know, that's what gets you to not have that problem. That's what gets you to learn. That's what gets you to grow. That's what gets you to not make the mistake. You see it all the time. Parents always want to teach the kid the lesson and do it for him through a positive means. But, hey, how many lessons did you learn through, I'll never do that again? So that's the big thing I'd like everyone to realize. So when you're laying out your goals, make them big, make them bold, make them bright, make them powerful, make them what you truly desire, see them in first person. I see this all the time. A gentleman makes a goal for himself. He shows the whole thing. I'm going to have a beautiful house on the hill with my beautiful wife and my three kids and white picket fence and a dog. And then I ask this question, can you picture yourself in that picture? And he says,
yeah.
No. I'm not there in that picture. I said, what, did you die and you left them your money? I mean, come on, you got to get yourself in that picture to visualize it for yourself. And once you've done that, then you got to ask your question of this. What if I don't get this goal? What is the worst case scenario if I stay where I'm at for the rest of my life? How would that make me feel? Because that little bit of push, that fire underneath you, is going to get you to move. And this is just one of the 4 gazillion techniques that we use to assist people with goal setting and getting what they desire.
Well, it's an incredible technique, and, you know, I can't think of his name. It's driving me crazy, but there's Sandler. That Sandler sales method is kind of based on that uncomfortable pain, and you've got to really focus on bringing that pain out in order to get somebody to try your new product once. And that's one of his selling techniques is that he teaches in his method to help focus and bring out that pain so people will make the decision to go ahead. It becomes easier to buy your product than it is to stay where they're at. And I think that, you know, with what you're saying, people need to be able to figure out how to apply that in their own life. And, you know, one of the things in my previous marriage that used to drive me nuts is, you know, my former husband was a big dreamer and stuff, but there wasn't any pain. There wasn't any consequence. If he didn't get it, oh, well. And so he never created a formal plan to achieve it, what he wanted. And that used to drive me nuts because I was always just hungry, hungry, hungry. What's the next thing? What's the next thing? Okay, when I hit this level, then I need to make a new plan because I need to get to the next level. And And some people just aren't wired that way, and they're not motivated by positive things. They've got to be motivated from, you know, an away from kind of value. I don't want this. I don't want that. And I like what you're saying, because you're telling people that not only focus on what you do want, but make sure that that pain is right behind you so the fire keeps scorching your butt to keep moving forward.
Let me give you an example here for a second. I was going to coin this phrase, talk to my lawyer, go get the patent on this, copyright this. But most people have dream boards. You've heard of dream boards, right?
Yeah.
Make a dream, cut out pictures of Neiman Marcus, stuff you want, put it on the wall, put out the Gucci purse, put out the Ferrari, the beach house, all that stuff on a board. Well, I think people should make nightmare boards.
I have a dream fridge.
You should have all my stuff on the refrigerator. And you should put on your door when you come in your house a nightmare board, and the nightmare board should look like this. You know, here's my current bank statement, and then you just change the date. Instead of saying 2009, put 2019 and realize you're going to have the same amount of money in 2019. Take a picture of yourself with your current weight. Go to Adobe Photoshop, stretch it out about 10 feet. Say, if I don't go to the gym, here's how I'll look, right?
Yeah.
You know, take a picture of all these things you don't want. Take a picture of your current car. You know, it may be new, 2005. Well, there's your current car in 2015. There's your same car. And look at that and ask yourself, is that what you want 10 years from now? The second you say no, you've now triggered yourself to go get you what you want. Folks, you may not like what I'm saying. It may not resonate. You may not like it. It may not be happy. It may not be positive. It may not be positive thinking. Well, I gave up positive thinking a long time ago and adopted realistic thinking with an approach. Meaning, if I walk out to my pool right now, and I learned this from Jim Rohn years ago, and if I walk out to my pool and I say, there is no algae, there is no algae, there is no algae, it's not going to go away. What I have to say is, there is algae in the pool. I'm going to have to do something about it. I've made a mistake, or, you know, the algae just came out of nowhere. I have to call the pool guy or do it myself and clean it. But just to wish it away isn't going to make it go away. You got to get realistic. So I am not a negative thinker. I'm just not one of those people that say, I'm happy, and I take the happy enema and I say, I'm happy when I'm not. What I do, if I ever in a bad mood or something, have to say to myself, what if I stay here? How could this be detrimental if I stay in this mode too long? What would that look like? And then I go through that process like Charles Dickens did, I guess, with the Christmas Carol. You know, what if I stay here too long? And then my brain immediately is going to trigger into, well, that's horrible. Well, where do I want to go? Now, how great does happiness look compared to depression? Well, it looks fantastic. It's like those Tide commercials. You know, here's Tide. Here's the leading brand. You know, Tide looks like it was washed in the Salt River, right? And the leading brand does, forgive me. And Tide looks like it was washed in chlorine bleach. And how great does it look, one compared to the other? So to compare those two things can create a jumping board for you to start getting where you want to go.
Well, and I think that you know, perspective is everything. And if people are sitting there and they're feeling uncomfortable or they're disturbed by your words, it's because on some level they're identifying with the trueness of your statements. You know, you can't deny that. I mean, anybody. Yeah, but you got to be honest with yourself, you know, and that sometimes people run through life and they cannot look themselves in the mirror and just be honest with themselves. And
I've seen that so many times. And when you get straight with yourself, when you have that day when you say to yourself, no more, no more, no more, I won't live this way anymore, that's the day you change your life. And that day didn't happen just because you woke up and were inspired. It got to the point where you said, I can't do that anymore. And more lives are changed by the pain. Because I'm telling you, if you don't believe me, and you're saying there's no way this is true, take a few minutes to watch the Biography Channel, and you tell me one person who got something large in this world that didn't go through some major challenges. So you're going to have to deal with some of that stuff to get to where you want to go, but your challenges are your gifts. So you have to ask yourself this question, do you really want it? If you really want those goals, that's great. But then you have to ask yourself the next question, not what could happen if I get it, what would happen if I stay where I'm at and I know where I want to go. So we walk people through this and about a zillion other processes to help them assist them how to grow. But this one alone, I believe, is the greatest factor to assist people in getting their goals, because if you put that down, your towards and your away values, we call them in NLP, and you put them down on one page, you know, what you want to move towards and what you'd like to move away from, and you put them in front of you on one page, you will be amazed on how that's going to be able to assist you in getting what you truly desire.
Oh, agreed. And, you know, I talk about that when we go through acceptance and affirmation and we start working toward creating mentally those images where we feel like we're worthy of our goals, because that's a piece of the puzzle that a lot of people don't bring into play. They put that other skinny person, their famous celebrity in a bikini on the fridge. They don't put a Photoshopped version of themselves looking great. They put some other fat person on the fridge to be a negative stimulus to them to keep that fridge door shut. They don't take the Photoshopped version of themselves, you know, with an extra 40 or 50 pounds. Because, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road, is because they've got to connect the dots. And I hear so many people saying, I don't want to be poor. And not every one of them will say, I want to be rich. But they say, I don't want to be poor. But everybody's definition of poverty is completely different than an act. Unless you focus on that pain, you're never going to get to, if you're an away from kind of person, if that's how you're motivated, like most of the population is, if you don't crank up the heat on that and really define that as clearly as you do your goals, what you don't want, so you can focus on what you do want and make sure that that heat is turned up, that you're never going to truly get to that financial independence. You're not going to get to that personal success, professional success, whatever it is that your goals are in. You're not going to get there if you don't have a clear picture and can see yourself inside it.
Absolutely. And like you said, affirmations. Affirmations are great for 3% of the world. 3%. The other 97% can use them, but they have to use the fire along with it. I know this for an absolute fact, because affirmations without action is delusion. That means you're thinking it, you're thinking it, you're thinking it, but you're not doing it. And this is why the 800,000 people, the gazillion people that bought The Secret, that sat at home and waited for things to happen, I would love to see how many people had their furniture taken away because they sat there all day waiting for things to change. Now, some of you, I know for a fact, used it correctly. You motivated yourself, you inspired yourself, you affirmed some things to yourself, and then what happened was, you know, you went out and did something. But if you sit there and you want to attract it, even if you want to attract a check into your mailbox, you still have to get off your couch and go to your mailbox, am I right? To get where you
agree.
Want to go. I mean, you can't just sit there and expect things to change. And there are a lot of people, misleading people out there, because there is a market for selling the magic pill. There is a market for telling people that you don't have to do much, just take this product. There is a market for to pop this success in a bottle. And I'm going to tell all of you out there, it isn't hard work. It's the challenge of getting your mind aligned correctly around what you truly desire and learning how your brain currently operates. As soon as you can take control of your brain. Now, what I mean by control of your brain is every one of us has, when we were born, we didn't come with one thing that your VCR, DVD player, your Blu-ray disc player, whatever you buy, your Nintendo, your Xbox 360, your Wii, all come with an owner's manual. When you come out of mommy, you don't come with an owner's manual, how to operate yourself effectively, emotionally, mentally, physically, how to understand your financial state of mind. What you come with is nothing. You come with a plan called figure it out as you go. And figure out as you go. The one thing most people never take is, I teach this all the time, is that I just send out an awesome audio series, a video series on the web on emotional marketing. And I teach everyone that we go to school from preschool, kindergarten, elementary school, and all the way up to the ladder, high school, some people college, grad school, law school, whatever it is. But how many classes do people take on Emotion 101?
Do they offer that?
Yeah, Emotion 202, how to deal with depression, 303, right? It doesn't come up. You know, we have Home Ec, Sex Ed, all these other courses, but we have 8,000 gazillion emotions in a day, yet we don't have words to describe them. So this is why we have a completely medicated society. That's a whole other call, a whole other day. But most people have not figured out how to operate their emotions effectively and accepted that most people are being misled on how to do this, because a few people got lucky by writing their goals and going and doing it. You write them and do it. The challenge is, if that's not working for you, there is another plan. It's not your fault. There's another plan. You've been misled. You have to understand that that big fat person on your fridge with a picture of you on their face would probably get you to avoid the cheesecake today. a lot more than having the skinny person on the fridge, because the skinny person on the fridge, I'm eating the cheesecake. Fat person on the fridge with a picture of me losing all my money because I'm overweight, people won't want to do business with me, that would motivate me to keep that thing shut and go get a padlock to close it up.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's never that skinny person that walks by me that gets me to put the bread down. It's never that person that I see. It's the person that hits me and the person on the other side of the aisle
sure.
with the same butt cheek that makes me stop.
It's going on Facebook and seeing your friends from high school 40 pounds more than you and saying, I don't want to be that way.
Okay. I know. You know, that's almost, you know, the best thing about high school reunions is you can be like, whoo, man, am I lucky.
Man, am I lucky, or man, I got some work to do, one of the two. And if you're not where you desire to be right now, you got to tap yourself on the back, say, awesome, I finally know what I don't want. If you're not where you want to be financially right now, you got to say, this is great. Tap yourself on the back, say, it's only up from here. This is going to be awesome. I'm so glad I found this place because I don't want to be here ever again.
Yeah, you know, Forbes did this little, they're doing this quote thing for a Mother's Day article that's going to be coming up. And they interviewed me, and I'm going to leak my part of the interview. But
sure.
one of the things that my mother said to me, especially when times would get tough, and I remember when I was getting ready to try out for the cheer line again. Every year you had to try out again.
Mm-hmm.
And I had pulled my groin, and my one leg, I couldn't do any high kicks. And when we got to the school and I went to drop me off for the tryouts, I said, you know what, I just don't want to do it. And you know what, my mom said, well, I can't go in there and do it for you. You're the only one that can get you on that palm line. Maybe if you just explain to them that you're competing with an injury to see if maybe they'll compensate for you, that's fine. But she said, if it's meant to be, it's up to you. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm just in pain. I just don't, you know, my mom said, get out of the car and I'm not coming to pick you up unless you have made that palm line so you can walk home. She goes, either way, get out of the car. And I sat there and I was like, what do I want? And I knew, you know, I had so much fun the year before. I said, I got to be on the cheer line again. All my girlfriends are on it. This is like what I need to do. So I just sucked it up and I said, if it's meant to be, it's up to me. And nobody else can determine your course or path, and you need to know right then and there in that moment. I thought to myself, well, if I don't go in there and at least try, I know that I definitely won't make it if I don't walk through that door, and I know that I won't have the same fun that I had last year because I won't be able. And so missing out was so much of a motivator that I hobbled my sorry pulled groin body into the tryouts, and I tried out, and I still made it because something came within me, and I was able to get my high kicks up there. And I know that some of the men that are listening to this are probably going, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But, you know, all my life has been focused on, you know, achieving goals. But what got me there wasn't the thought of being able to roll around in a bathtub of money. It was, what happens if I don't get it? And
that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing. I got the same story. I'm in high school hockey. My freshman year, I didn't make the team. Do you know how hard I worked the next year to make the team, become a starting player?
Oh, like every day. You probably slept with
every
your hockey
day. I said, I don't like that feeling. It felt awful. I went home. I was so sad, borderline crying, and didn't make the varsity team my freshman year. Had to figure it all out. And what was amazing was I thought I was good enough. I was positive. I thought I could make it. But that pain drove me to work harder than I've ever worked in my life to get to where I want to go the next year, that I had advanced my skills dramatically because of the pain. So I know that you might not like what I'm saying right now. It may not feel good what I'm saying right now, yet it works. So I gave up years ago what made sense, and I started doing what works. And when I switched to what works versus what made sense, and there's things that I do with my clients that 20 years they could be going to a therapist, 20 years where they can't get through something. Or one of my clients, 43 years, has never been on a date in his entire life, 43 years old, never been on a date, adjusted a couple things with him, 20 years of therapy, comes to me and I do something unconventional, something you'd never think anyone would do, and in an hour of working with this guy, rearranged some stuff. A few months later, he started dating, and last month, I got an email saying, the girl I've been dating for the last 2 years would like to take it to the next step. What advice do you have?
How about ask her to marry you?
Ask her to marry you. Yep. Unconventional versus and results oriented versus what makes sense. Because what makes sense is what we've been doing, and what we've been doing typically hasn't been working. So it's time to do things different in a different manner. And that's all that I'm about, is doing things different, getting people results, and getting you on your own so you don't need me anymore, so you can do it all yourself.
You know what's amazing to me is the average career of a psychotherapist has less than 20 clients during their entire career, yet they're the ones that point fingers and say that, you know, all of this, all these motivational people, and they always pick on Tony because he's probably the most visible. But
sure.
They always say, oh, you know, they're just fly by night. What do they know? But neurolinguistic programming is a science. It's got research behind it. And it's outcome based. It's solution oriented. It's focused on that. It doesn't matter how you got here or why you got here. If you don't want to be here anymore, let's figure out the new pattern. How do we establish new habits to create the outcomes that you do desire?
Let's change that one thing about you. And I get that all the time. And I challenge any therapist out there, bring me a tough client. I do the same thing that Tony did when he first got started. Bring me your challenged person that truly desires to change, and we will absolutely be able to change that person very, very rapidly. I do it at my events all the time. I have a lady who is going to therapy. She was on meds. She comes up to the front of the room. She says, you know, hey, but I've been depressed for 10, 15 months, you know, I hate my job, I'm unhappy, haven't been able to get a bed for the last 10 weeks, and within 30 minutes, we adjusted a couple of things. She was completely ecstatic the rest of the weekend. A week later, husband sends an email, says, thank you very much, my wife has not been the same since we first got married. 6 months later, she is in a new job, loving her life, and leading the region in sales. So this type of stuff is just amazing. It's yet you have to step away from the box and allow yourself to change. I mean, it's not like we've done this with one person. Our company's had tens of thousands of clients that we've worked with, and we have an extremely high 98-99% success rate with keeping our clients on task to what they want because and getting them their goals, because people absolutely need to learn what works versus what they've been taught their whole lives. And it's kind of sad that even the people that I work along in the industry of self-development are still misleading people. They're still misleading people on what they've been told for so long, how to get what you want, and they're missing some of the primary pieces of the puzzle. And even the NLP community, the majority of the people that are practitioners and master practitioners of neurolinguistic programming, they got their degree. It's no different than a whole bunch of people that, you know, go to college and get a degree. They're no smarter than people that didn't go to college and get a degree. They don't know how to use it correctly. They talk a good game. They don't use it themselves. They're not congruent in their own approach. They can talk about it. They can act it. They take 1,000 courses on it. They know every word, but they don't know the application of it. So I a lot of times don't even tell people about the NLP stuff because people think, oh, yeah, NLP, you know, you're certified, you're good. And there's so many certified people that got a 14-day degree or whatever you want to call it, and, man, they're no better than someone that didn't.
Oh, you're right. And you said my most favorite word of all, congruency. And
how many life coaches have we seen? I go to these meetings, I speak at these clubs, and like, how many life coaches do we have in the room? And they're nice people. I'm not knocking anybody. But when you're 400 pounds overweight, you have $100,000 in debt, you don't own your own home, you're telling people how to help their own finances, help their own life, help their own finance, and you still don't have a client, and you're telling people you're a life coach. The biggest reason people get depressed and happy in this world is they forget to help themselves, and they go help everybody else. And they forget to focus on their own problems, their own issues, their own challenges. And that's where the congruency comes in. You know, persuasion and making money is effortless when you can learn just to operate yourself effectively.
Well, you know, and the thing is that I always come back to, you know, when I seek out a professional, I expect them to have a certain look, a certain walk, a certain talk. And I expect them to be congruent with their game. And, you know, I'm not going to go to a fat doctor if I want to be skinny. You know, it's just kind of the sort of thing.
We're not saying
and
that the fat doctor might not have cool strategies. It just doesn't feel congruent.
Exactly. You know, and it's so funny, you know, because I always talk about there's a reason why airplane stewardesses tell you to fasten your own oxygen mask first.
Sure.
Before helping somebody else, because you can't help others if you don't have the tools yourself. You just
I
can't
even
do
talk
it.
About that on
it's
CD
like,
one of Call to Action.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, you know, it was so funny. I remember when I started dating my husband, and he was chatting with one of his friends, and his friends was kind of like unloading on him, going, oh, my God, my girlfriend's like $30,000 in debt and blah, 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 and like just like on and on and saying, I can't believe it. I've been paying her bills, and yet she still has all this debt. And so he says, so I just want to know, like, how much you owe. And I said, okay. I said, so is that like cars, houses, and credit cards? And he said, yeah. So I kind of looked off into space a little bit, and I was like, carry the 2, 4, 5, 6. I'm like, that would be zero. And he's like, no, really. And he goes, how much debt do you have? And I said, including my mortgage on my house and my cars and my credit cards. And he goes, yeah. And I said, none. And he was blown away, and he goes, how can that be? And I said, how can I tell people how to manage money if I can't manage my own?
Sure.
You know, and he just looked at me, and he was dumbfounded, and because, you know, he was trying to make a sweeping statement about girls not being able to manage their money or credit and stuff. So, and it was kind of funny because it sent me off in a very interesting direction of research about women and money. And I learned a lot of neat things that's in one of my next books coming out here soon. But speaking of materials, because I'm looking at the time, and I only asked you
for... We could go for days. You and I could do a 10-hour show if we wanted. This is fun.
I know. Well, you know, because you're unconventional. I kind of think of myself as a contrarian, too. And I just like how unorthodox your approach is. And on that note, for people that would like to pursue more information about you,
sure.
I have a website that you have that they can people can get your program at www.callthenumber2actionnow.com. And we'll also put a link on our unlockyourwealth.com webpage for people that want to click over. And for listeners of this show, if you enter the discount code ACTION in the shopping cart, you can receive his program for $99.99. So for less than $100, you can learn the tools, tricks, tips, and techniques that Mike Burnoff teaches. Also, on his website, you were also offering free audio and video downloads for our listeners as well at www.mikeburnhoff.com/grow. And again, that will all be featured on the unlockyourwealth.com website. So after the broadcast, if you tool on over to the website, those links will be up and fresh for you so you can click through to use his material. Is there any other parting words that you would like to leave with our listeners about being a goal setter and turning up the fire on the negativity so you can continue to pursue the positive things? Any last parting words you'd like to share?
Here's my last parting words. Decide what you really want. Decide what you really want. Find somebody or someone to assist you to get it, whether it's me or someone else. Find somebody to assist you. Because to do it alone makes no sense at all. I had millions of mentors along the way. Really, literally 5, 10, 15 people that assisted me along the way. Find somebody, stretch yourself and allow yourself to grow, and get around what our industry calls profound knowledge. Get around stuff that doesn't make sense to the average bear but gets results for other people. Like she mentioned, her call to action set here on the line. I know the big thing is, as I explain the what it is to take action, it's not about call to think about it anymore. It's not called to get on the radio show anymore. And I know for a fact we would all love if next week you were here and you maybe couldn't listen during the time of the call, but you could check it out later, and you were out there taking action and doing what you had to do. I love when people have to miss my stuff because they're out there making money, making things happen. Because the big thing at the end of the day is it's up to you. It's up to you to take the actions you need to take. Just make sure you're choosing the right ones. And if you got an opportunity like we offered you today, got our set at half price, take advantage of it. Send us an email if you're interested. You can send it to, you know, mike@communicategreat.com for any of the questions or info. But the big thing is find people that know what's going on. Find their Twitter page, find Facebook, follow what's going on with these people, because there's people out there that have information that you need. Yet you have to ask yourself, is what you've been doing working? Is what you've been doing working? When I realized that the majority of the self-development industry is teaching you plans and action steps instead of helping you work on your core strength to change yourself, I realized I'm not going to follow those people anymore. I'm only going to work with those who have the techniques to get what I desire now, not the ones that talk about it. So I'm excited to be here, and I know that we're going to be putting together another program here that I talked about in the future. I got a great gift for anybody who is interested. If you want to send me that email, we have a great gift for all of you. We have a product coming out that we're going to be giving away to the masses, but I can't get into that right now. We're going to have to talk about that at another time. So I want to thank you guys for your time today, and is there any other thing you'd like to ask me?
Other than when is the next time that you and I can chat again? Because I feel so empowered after I talk to you.
I'd love to chat again. I mean, you and I should probably talk a little later today, you and I. But we definitely should put something together here on the show here pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And, you know, you're right about the opportunities that people have. And if they're out there, you know, experiencing their call to action and they're not able to listen to this broadcast live, you can go back and download our show. So
that's
a neat thing. Put it on your iPod. You can listen
to
it later when it's convenient for you. And that's the one great thing about this show that I'm so thrilled for. And as we come closer to finishing our keys, we're going to have available a best of. So those that want to get the great interviews and listen to all of the gems, we're going to have a best of available. And I'm so excited. But thanks again for being a part of the show. And for those who are listening and got their easing this week, the answer to the trivia question will be rewarded with one of Michael's packages. So I have it sitting here on my desk waiting for the right answer to the trivia question. So again, thanks so much for participating in the show and for that gracious gift to our listeners. Make sure you all take and log into his website to get the opportunity to shop for half price. And we'll be back with more right after this.
Number 14, Office Depot, Old Spice Chevrolet. And you're listening to Heather Wagonhals on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. You are listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I'm Heather Wagonhals, your illustrious hostess with the mostest. And for this Saturday, May 2nd, broadcasting in the lovely Scottsdale, Arizona at the HQ Real Estate and Investment Offices, the sun is out, but sort of, kind of, not really. We're getting a whole bunch of clouds coming in. And, you know, they said April showers bring May flowers, and we got quite a bit of rain, and our flowers are starting to peek out. But I'm creating a new May saying, or at least a May title, and this is going to be Money May. For those of you that are interested for Money May, we are going to take and have a new program coming out with our different e-zines. For those of you that are not currently subscribers, you need to get on the program, because for Money May, if you're a subscriber to the e-zine, you can sign up for our broadcast text messaging. And we're going to do a tip a month, a tip a day via text messaging. So if you're an e-zine subscriber, all you need to do is go in and update your preferences from the unlockyourwealth.com website. But if you are not currently a subscriber, you can visit the website or just simply send an email to ezine@unlockyourwealth.com, and give us your cell phone telephone number, and we will broadcast a new tip a day for Money May. So that's going to be the neat thing for this week. And so if you're signed up, it's May 2nd, so you have another 29 more days of fabulous tips to come your way via text message. So again, to subscribe to the weekly electronic magazine and get to be a part of the Money Made text messaging, give your phone number in your preferences and update it if you're an existing subscriber, but also send an email if you're not, or go to the website and sign up at ezine@unlockyourwealth.com. So back to more minutes on your money. We have some really fun articles that I kind of came up with today. I like this one, 10 Financial Urban Legends. This is from Bankrate.com. And writing checks in red ink won't prolong the float, like many people think. You really do have to pay income tax. That's for all of those fabulous solvent citizens. And so let me give you some other myths that I thought were great from Bankrate that came out. It says that you can float a check longer if you write it in red ink. And there's a theory that the bank's equipment can't scan the red ink, so it takes longer to process the check. But the color of the ink makes no difference nowadays. However, gel ink doesn't image very well, which makes it difficult to verify signatures, says Tracy Mills of the American Bankers Association. As a result, the bank cannot authorize the transaction, and chances are the check will be returned to the creditor or merchant. So instead of getting some extra time on the float, you wind up getting a bounced check fee because they can't discern your signature. So write it in blue or black ink and no gel pens. Myth number two, you don't have to pay income tax. Well, it's illegal. Only foreign income tax is subject to Uncle Sam's cut, but there's a form that you can file to exempt yourself, but nobody will tell you about it. Well, not so. The truth is there is no, and I know this specifically from real estate investment, there's extra forms if you are a foreigner because they have a form, it's a FERPA form, it's called Foreign Investment in Real Property Tax. And anytime you transfer real estate and you're a foreigner, they're going to get you extra big on those taxes. So there's no form, and you still have to fill out your IRS taxes by April 15th. Here's the third myth. I am under 18, so I can't be held accountable for a credit card debt or trying to say that they're wiped out by the time you turn 19. Sorry, Charlie, there is no free ride. It's only partly a myth because you cannot legally sign a binding contract, so you can't technically take out a loan or sign a credit card agreement. Because you're legally a child or a minor until age 18. If an adult co-signs on the card and makes you an account, makes you an authorized user on the account, you can do that. If not, it's considered fraud, and fraud does not have an age limit. So it doesn't matter how old you are, whether or not it's fraud is what the point is. Myth number four, I like this one. My hotel key card has my credit card information. And so they said, don't lose those things. Well, it's an urban legend, okay? A fraud detection team has honed in on one such hotel key and notified each other before verifying whether it was standard practice in the industry. And it wasn't, but they didn't find out until after the information leaked to the public and it became one of those fabulous urban legends. Luckily, the news has only risen to an annoyance level throughout the hotel industry, says Joe McInerney, president and CEO of the American Hotel and Lodging Association. But every 18 months or so, people seem to say this, but it hasn't stopped people from staying in hotel rooms where they have key cards. All that's on there is the code to unlock the specific door. So no worries about that. We are going to visit with the other six myths after our Investor's Edge segment, but I want to bring on our next guest. For Investor's Edge, like I said before, we're going to talk about green investing. And Richard Reinke, who is our next guest, he has extensive experience in managing public and private companies, and he served as an officer and a director for his current company since its formation in February of 2005, which is Green Wind Solar. As the president, he's responsible for the day-to-day operations of the company, and he's also in charge of executing the company's business strategies, negotiating and arranging distribution channels for his microgeneration product, and the development of new proprietary reliable energy products and technologies. They've got some interesting things in the works, one of which we're going to talk about today is their green industrial park out here in Arizona. So I would like to welcome to the show President and Chief Executive Officer of Green Wind Solar, Richard Reinke. Rich, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on, Heather. I'm actually calling you from Castle Hot Springs, which is about 50 miles north of downtown Phoenix. And we're up here this morning investigating some of the potentials for geothermal energy, which, as your listeners may or may not know, northern Arizona is a potential major resource for geothermal energy in the United States, and they're developing a geothermal power plant at Clifton Hot Springs. So we're up here at Castle Hot Springs looking into the same type of project. The U.S.
Explain
Department of Energy
for a second.
The U.S. Department
Can you
of Energy
explain
has
for a
just
second?
Yes.
I'm sorry, the connection here on the broadcast today seems to be kind of fuzzy, but you know, for those people that are not familiar with that term, most people think of Arizona and solar panels on the roof or hot water heaters. What is geothermal energy?
Well, actually, geothermal energy is using the heat generated from its core, essentially, that superheats water, and you can drill down and pump extremely hot water up that, when it hits the surface, turns into steam, and then the steam can be used to run a turbine, which generates electricity.
Okay. All right. Well, great.
The U.S. Department of Energy has just announced they're putting $84 million of new funding into geothermal technologies, and there's only a few places in the United States where geothermal, the geological formations, have high enough subterranean temperatures to make that work, because you need the temperature, but you also need the water. So this is an area where Arizona may actually be leading the nation.
Well, that's pretty exciting for us sun bunnies out here.
Well, you know, the other big thing in Arizona, of course, is solar power, and you don't have to know that it's sunny a lot out here. We the state just landed $1 billion solar plant that's going to be built by a company called Albiasi Solar. They're a Spanish company, and they're going to be building a huge solar thermal power plant out in Kingman, which should generate enough power for about 50,000 homes. And it's scheduled to be open in 2013. So there is a lot going on in this state, and we certainly have a lot of the desert land, which before didn't seem like such a great natural resource. All of a sudden, with the new solar technologies, it could be a tremendous resource.
Yeah, aren't they able to print solar cells now on materials as thin as tinfoil, where they can actually kind of print them with a printer?
Yeah. There is, they call it thin film technology, and they actually can print, in essence, solar panels that are very thin. Now, they're not quite as efficient as silicon-based panels, but they are much cheaper, they're lighter, and they're extremely easy to install. So you're starting to see those being used on some residential applications, and they also peel and stick them in a way and put them on parking structures. And you know, the idea is just to utilize space that normally wouldn't be used for anything, that's just a covering exposed to the sun, and now you can utilize it to create electricity.
Well, and who knew that Arizona had water, to think that that these hot springs would actually be able to create geothermal energy? Because you think of Arizona as a desert, and if anybody else has grown up like I have out here, I remember the Valley Fever commercials in the 70s where they would say, Dusty, Dusty, Dusty. And so I'm kind of interested in the different things that are available. Now, as somebody who's looking for investments that not just bring a financial return, but can bring that good fuzzy feeling as a return, what kind of things can people get involved in, whether it's here in Arizona or around, that would give them that benefit and be able to be involved in green investing, if you will?
Well, you know, in the 70s, when I grew up, I'm dating myself, but the movement for ecology had a saying, it was think globally, act locally. And I think that's a very good idea for people that are looking for, say, real estate investments that have a green twist to them. For example, you pointed out that our company is working on developing a green industrial park down by the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. And what that's going to consist of is not only LEEDs buildings, and that's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. It's a green building standard that incorporates energy-efficient electrical systems. It includes alternative energy such as solar panels on the roofs. It uses sustainable building materials that have a low carbon footprint to install and maintain and even manufacture. But so people should look at, in their local area, building projects that have these kind of green twists to them, that either they have alternative energy that's going into the building. One of the things that we're developing is a green data center. And that sounds almost like an oxymoron, because people don't associate a big data center with something that's environmentally self-sustaining. But there have been approximately 800 buildings over the past decade that have been LEED certified, which is, again, they comply with these green building standards. But there's only 2 data centers in this country right now that are LEED certified, and there's only another 6 that have applications pending right now. And this LEED certification comes by accumulating points through implementing green designs and operational procedures. And those are the types of things, whether it's a green data center, whether it's a green industrial park that may have alternative energy on site, those are the types of investments that a real estate investor could make that over time are going to be very good investments, because there's a good payback. Some of these green projects may cost a little bit more up front, but with the green practices that are utilized, such as more efficient servers, say, in a data center, cooling equipment, all of these things pay off over time. And some of these systems, actually, even though it may cost a little bit more on the front end, these LEED certified buildings are cheaper to run, and they have a good payback. Also, there's some programs in place right now, even for commercial and industrial installation of solar panels, where you get significant tax savings back from the government. So you're not only getting the benefit of generating your own electricity. In Arizona, they have what they call the Commercial Industrial Solar Energy Tax Incentive Program. And they give you a tax credit if you're a business owner, equal to 10% of the cost of the solar energy device, and you can't exceed $25,000 in credits for anyone. But the green
movement,
that's
a big chunk of money, though.
Oh, it's huge. And you know, for residential applications, you can get advanced depreciation of up to 30%. So what ends up happening is installing these types of systems not only let you over the long term reduce your energy costs, but over the short term you can offset a lot of those costs. So now is a really good time for people to start looking into, depending on the area they're in, solar power or wind power, whether it's going to be something that augments your home or something that augments your business.
Well, Just real quick, because we're starting to use some jargon, and for people that aren't real familiar, what is it? What does sustainable building materials mean?
Well, that's a really good question, Heather, because some of these terms have a lot of different things. Most of the time when you talk about sustainable building materials, you're talking about materials that have a lower carbon footprint to produce than a similar type material. For example, there's right here in the greater Phoenix area, there's a company that builds a product that is similar to a concrete, but it's lighter, and it takes a lot less energy to actually produce that material than it takes to produce concrete. So that's called a sustainable building material because the impact on the overall impact on the environment is less than what it's being substituted for.
Wow, that's really neat. It was funny because I was driving by this one intersection, and I remember seeing, it was kind of looks like a retail store from the outside, and it's a green product store for contractors. And I was kind of saying to myself, and this was like 4 or 5 years ago, I'm like, well, that'll never fly. And then all of a sudden, there's been this big push to go green. And I was wondering, you know, in addition to this tax credit that you just mentioned, what else is on the horizon for green real estate projects that you may know of? And how is having our current president, who is very pro-green, going to be for encouraging those projects, and do we see more incentives coming down the pipeline for green real estate investments?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I don't think it's any surprise to anyone that President Obama is promoting green energy. He's almost every day they come out and they announce another billion here, another billion there for energy research and development. The package that the president put together to promote his green plan, even before he took office, his transition team came out, and what they're trying to do is create up to 5 million new jobs, and they plan to invest $150 billion over the next decade in private firms, giving them financing in the clean energy sector, both for research and development and to implement a lot of these different solar and wind projects. They have a plan to reduce the U.S. consumption of petroleum products, and part of that people have seen now with the proposal for a cap-and-trade system where, just like in Europe, they're proposing to limit the amount of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases that a business can emit during any fiscal year. And so if you reach your limit in September, say, you would have to go out and buy carbon from someone else. They're also... The president is promoting the use in the United States of hybrid cars, you know, vehicles with hybrid engines and batteries that can be charged from your home. And interestingly, a lot of these hybrid cars, when you have a green industrial park, there's going to be sockets available that the car can not only plug in and you can charge the car. Say you have a parking structure that's covered with some of the thin film silicon we just talked about. You could actually be charging your car while you're at work, but the system can also use the battery in the car to draw on electricity if there's a peak demand. So the cars not only can be charged at your facility, but they also can be used as a reservoir to provide electricity back to the building. The president's come out with a plan that he wants 10% of U.S. electricity produced from renewable sources 2012 and 25% by 2025, and that is going to really open the door for all kinds of solar projects, specifically in Arizona. We're not such a great place for wind. I'm sure all of your listeners who've driven out through the Coachella Valley on Route I-10 have seen the huge wind turbines on there in the San Gorgonio Pass. That's one of the few areas that's geographically close to us where wind power really makes sense. But in Arizona, of course, solar and some of this geothermal, it's going to make this state a real powerhouse for energy. The thing we just talked about with the cap and trade system, they're trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions really significantly over the next 10 years, like by 20%. And that's just an incredible goal, and it's going to require a lot of money. Stephen Chu is President Obama's energy secretary, and he talked about the federal government, the Department of Energy, really taking an active role in promoting renewable energy and finally coming up with a national electricity transmission system, which if you're familiar, every year somewhere they have a huge blackout because of power. They're talking about installing what's called a smart grid and starting to do that across the country. And really, if you think about it, most of our technology that gives us electricity right now is from the 20s and 30s. That's 1920s and 1930s. That's when this stuff was put in. So it's really high time to bring the grid system up into the 21st century, get it digitalized, and make it more secure.
Well, that's an important thing. But, you know, the one thing that kind of gripes me, and I think that it doesn't do enough to stimulate proactivity, is the cap and trade system. The way it stands now, it doesn't say stop polluting. It just says if you continue to pollute, you're going to have to buy credits from somebody else that's actually being proactive and has extra to sell. So I think that they need to retool that system to be truly effective and to really make green a part of everybody's life. I think the system needs to be overhauled a little bit from that standpoint, and really working to create a more digitized, more effective grid system, because we know so much more. I mean, I just look at technology as a whole, and we have learned more in the last 20 years than we did in all the time before the last 20 years as far as technology has expanded. But, you know, what we know about sustainable living projects, they're doing affordable housing projects now with sustainable green materials, which is really exciting. What you're doing with the Green Industrial Park is also exciting. And creating, you know, I think about companies like yours that are on the edge of this innovation and are taking a proactive position and really trying to be leaders in this. And I think about all that money that's wasted at the Department of Energy, and how can we, instead of creating a bigger budget in the government, and, you know, this is just my kind of, if I could design the government for a day thing, and take and funnel that money into the companies that are making the difference, because the bureaucracy hasn't done anything in 30 years to lessen our dependence on energy from other countries. And so why can't we create a system where people and companies that are innovative like yours get some sort of a bonus or a benefit for doing so, and then the government can reduce its size and reduce its budget, but we can, you know, exponentially multiply our effectiveness?
Well, you know, I couldn't agree with you more on the cap and trade system. I really don't like it the way it's structured right now, and I don't like it the way it's structured in Europe, where you can be a polluter, but then you turn around and say, well, I'm going to offset that by investing in somebody that's not a polluter. Now, the only part of it that makes sense to me is, you know, they've come out with all kinds of different offsets which sounded good on paper but in real life don't work. And I'll give you some examples. You can invest in carbon credits or carbon offsets for planting trees, for example, and that sounds really good. Oh, I'm going to plant the tree. It's going to grow up in for 100 years, and it's going to soak in the carbon dioxide and give off oxygen. But what a scientist pointed out is that's a closed system, and there's no guarantee the tree's going to grow to its full height. It's not going to be cut down for lumber. And even if it does grow, eventually it's going to die and fall down, and all the carbon dioxide and the carbon, the other substances it soaked up out of the atmosphere, is going to release back into the atmosphere. So the only carbon credit type program that makes sense to me is if someone is actually investing directly in, say, a wind project or a solar project or a geothermal project, and those projects generate so many gigawatts of power over a year, you can compare that to, say, a coal facility that generates electricity, and you can actually say, okay, instead of this coal plant generating the electricity, it would have pumped out this much carbon dioxide and these many greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. Now we've generated the same amount of electricity cleanly, and that makes more sense to me. But I do totally agree with you that in the real world, it makes sense for somebody to say, hey, I'm going to have a huge house, and I'm going to have this huge carbon footprint, and then I'm going to pay somebody else not to be as polluting as I am.
Al Gore. Oh, I'm sorry. I just sneezed there. Yeah, that's rather provocative. You know, because this is the Investor's Edge, and this segment of our show is all about creating opportunities for our people that are prepared and ready for the opportunity for investment, how does somebody go about finding out about these green investment opportunities and how to participate? Is there a key search word that somebody can Google, or are these investment opportunities registered somewhere? How does somebody find out?
Well, there's different websites you can go to look for green investment opportunities. There's a site called investments.com. There's other places you can watch the news in your own community and follow some of the companies. I mean, Phoenix and Scottsdale are full of companies, emerging companies that are involved in new green technologies, companies that are building, you know, solar facilities, as we are developing the Green Industrial Park, for example. You know, there's a lot of sources for news out there. If somebody went, like you pointed out, a Google search, and you wanted to search for alternative energy, solar power, and just plug in the locale that you're interested in, there's information readily available.
What was that website again? Because the line kind of got a little choppy. What was the website that you had said up front?
It's called investorideas.com, and for example, if you went to that and you plugged in the name of our company, all the information about what we're doing pops up, all the press releases and news articles, and you can do that pretty much for any company. And again, I would suggest that people, it's think globally but act locally. Look around in your own city and your own neighborhood for projects that you know, you'd be more comfortable with, especially real estate. You can go out and you can see the project as it's being built. But there's a lot of, you know, sources of information out there.
What is a couple things that are red flags or things that people should avoid when considering green projects that would make it not a good investment?
Well, you know, the saying is there's many shades of green, and just because somebody says they have some kind of green project doesn't mean it really is. You should look not just at whether it's green, but look at the underlying project. For example, when we were talking about building a green data center, the reason is because data centers are needed now. There's going to be a major expansion in medical imaging. The government is really promoting moving towards updating the system so that all of the medical records, say, for you could be digitalized so that if you were in a different country or a different state, not in your hometown where your doctor has ready access, an emergency physician treating you could get access to this. So it makes sense to go out and develop a data center. Now, if you can make that a green data center and that becomes cost-effective, then that's the type of investment that's a good investment because it has both elements. It has the green element, but also underlying that, there's a real need for that kind of a program. And so I would tell everybody, don't invest in something just because it's green or just because it has some kind of environmental twist. The basic investment, the basic type of project has to be sustainable on its own.
And they should also look for that LEED certification on projects, too. That's also something to take a look at.
Yeah, what's going to happen with LEED certification, I lived for a long time in Los Angeles, and it's very similar to earthquake retrofitting. What happened originally is the government said, well, all new buildings should be, designed so they can withstand an earthquake. And then they said all new buildings will be designed so they can withstand an earthquake. And then they said all these old buildings, it would be nice if they were retrofitted to withstand an earthquake. And then they said all these old buildings will be retrofitted. And it's going to be the same kind of thing. The LEED certification, there's many different levels of LEED certification, but it all comes down to whether you're using sustainable materials in building, whether there's alternative energy created, say, by a wind turbine on the facility or solar panels, whether it's energy efficient. One of the things with data centers is these the different types of servers and computers in there get very hot, and it takes a lot of energy. For every watt you put in to run the machine, it takes a watt of energy to cool the machine. And so if you can come up with more energy-efficient servers and more energy-efficient processes, that's where you start. So the LEED certification is important on buildings. There's mandates now for all new government buildings to be LEED certified to some level. And what you're going to find eventually is those types of green building codes more and more are going to become mandatory.
Yeah, well, What could you say that a parting thought for you as we close out this segment of Investor's Edge? And for those that are listening that want to go to these websites, I will have these links available to Green Wind Solar and Investor Ideas and some of the other things that you mentioned about LEED Solar and some of the government links to where people can find out what qualifies an investment or to be able to put the green label on things.
Yeah, I would say that a good place to start, not blowing our own horn, but on our website, greenwindsolar.com, there's all kinds of information available both for, you know, the different programs for installing wind and solar. There's maps, there's links to the Department of Energy. I mean, there's a lot of information out there, and the more people know about alternative energy, how they personally can participate in it, as well as in the big scheme of things, the better they'll be positioned to make wise investments.
Well, that's great. I'm so grateful that you were able to come on to the broadcast today, because so many people have been asking about green stuff, and you know, I see you a couple times a week passing through the halls here, and then I thought, you know, there is my ultimate resource for green. Why am I not thinking about having you guys on the show? So I'm so glad that you were able to join us this week, and I'm jealous because I like it up there at Castle Hot Springs. We used to go up there in high school back in the day and hang out and do our bonfires and things like that. So kind of a fun place up there. So enjoy your weekend, and again, thanks for joining us. All of those links that we talked about will be available on our website after the broadcast, and we are going to have more and news by the numbers after this.
If I were a rich man, all day long I'd busy, busy long. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a busy, busy rich, idle, 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 idle man, I'd build a big tall house with rooms by the dozen, right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with real wooden floors below. There could be one long staircase just going up, and one even longer coming down. And one.
Welcome back to the broadcast. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals, Unlock Your Wealth Radio, for this fabulous Saturday, Money May 2nd. Thanks for tuning in and joining us. For Money May, you can get your Money May text message a day segment by signing up for our weekly e-zine. You can do that one of two ways at www.unlockyourwealth.com and go to the show page to sign up, or just simply send an email to ezine@unlockyourwealth.com and include your phone number. We will add you to the broadcast text message. Additionally, if you are not currently a partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program and would like to advertise on our show, you can learn about the benefits that our featured advisors receive by being a part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. You can have all of this and more just by calling 1-866-966-9420. Again, that number is 1-866-966-9420. And now for the segment that you have all been waiting for, our regularly scheduled News by the Numbers with our segment host, the fabulous Karen Gurm. Karen, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Heather.
What do you have on store?
This week, fresh signs of recovery bolster Wall Street. According to Reuters, stocks rose on Friday as surging oil prices pushed energy shares higher, and fresh economic data suggested key parts of the economy could be stabilizing. The U.S. factory sector contracted further in April, but at a slower pace, while consumers reported feeling more confident about the economy last month than at any time since September, when Lehman Brothers collapsed, paralyzing the global financial system. Exxon Mobil Corp. rose 2% to end at $68.01, and the S&P Energy Index gained 3% after crude oil futures settled above $53 a barrel. The energy stocks, if you can determine the word cheap, are reasonably priced, said Carl Birkelbach, chairman and CEO of Birkelbach Investment Securities in Chicago. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained more than 44.25 points, or more than 0.5%, to 8,212.41. The Standard & Poor's 500 Index rose 4.71 points, also more than 0.5%, to 877.52. The NASDAQ Composite Index edged up nearly 2 points, or 0.1%, to 1,719.2. For the week, the Dow rose 1.7%, the S&P gained 1.3%, and the NASDAQ ended up 1.5%. The NASDAQ's gains marked the 8th straight weekly advance for the index, its longest streak since December 1999. Limiting gains on Wall Street was American Express, down 3.7% to $24.29 as the top drag on the Dow, after it was reported that regulators delayed results of widely anticipated stress tests, which aim to measure the strength of the 19 largest U.S. banks. The news, which has fixated investors around the world who are already concerned about the health of the U.S. banking system, will be released late on Thursday afternoon, a government source said. There's some apprehension about the stress tests next week, and the fact that the results were pushed back, I think, is more of a negative sign, said Michael James, a senior trader at Wedbush Morgan in Los Angeles. McDonald's shares were also among the top plays on the Blue Chip Index after Goldman Sachs removed the fast food chain from its conviction buy list, although it affirmed its positive ratings. McDonald's shares fell 1.7% to $52.40. And that is your News by the Numbers for the week.
Yay! Well, thank you so much, Karen.
My pleasure as usual.
Our studio audience agrees that was yet another fabulous segment. Now, moving forward, boy, this broadcast has been so exciting, and our interviews have really gone well, and we've been very fortunate to be able to have had everyone stay longer than what they originally agreed to. Hopefully that was my new vocabulary that I learned from our dear Michael Burnoff, who taught me how to use my new vocabulary to be persuasive. So let's finish up on our minutes on our money with our financial urban legends real quick before we delve into our keys for this week. So number five is boycotting a few gasoline brands brings gas prices down. This is the one I love. Poor Exxon and Mobil. They often show up as the bad guys in a mass email urging Americans to avoid their pumps on certain days. And, you know, it's easy to understand language makes the plea seem rather, but the trouble lies in it's too simple, and economics don't really work that way. For starters, gasoline is what is known as a fungible commodity. Boy, that could be a word of the day, couldn't it? If one company has an oversupply, it sells it to a competitor. So no matter where you buy it from, the basic supply numbers remain the same. And you know what? It doesn't matter what name is on the truck. They all go to the same holding tank to fill up before they distribute. So, you know, you're really just, you're not doing anything. You're not able to make the statement. Although one would like to hope that we could make a financial statement to certain companies that way. Doesn't work with that particular industry, at least. Myth number six, it is better if you don't sign the back of your credit card. Ugh, this one's my favorite. Ugh. Some well-meaning pigeon decided one day that this would protect him from identity theft. However, in the real world, writing, please ask for ID, and or not using your authentic signature or signing at all, actually doesn't validate the card. And retailers can actually not accept a card that isn't signed. So asking for ID is not the answer. The card must be authorized by your signature. And I like what this gentleman says here. Unfortunately, in the real world, it only protects you from having the merchant accept your payment at the checkout counter. Unsigned cards in the hands of fraudsters is much easier to use than for unauthorized purchases. So what's so simple is instead of stealing a card and then having to learn how to forge your signature, they can just put their version of your signature on the back of the card. So it doesn't really benefit you because if somebody does go to verify the signature by looking at the back of the card, it's going to be accurate, so they're going to let it fly. So sign your credit cards, folks. I was always that cashier at the counter that listened to my boss and was the one that never, ever accepted a card without a signature. And especially if it says on there, please see ID, nope, didn't work either because you can make a fraudulent identification to match that name too. So sign the card, folks. Myth number seven, you can make a pile of dough by helping a foreigner solve his money problems. Oh, my gosh, I remember the first time I got this email, and I was so scared because I was in the mortgage industry, and I thought, oh, my God, somebody wants me to commit fraud, and I had no idea about spam. It was about 12 years ago when it came over, and I was blown away. Hello, my name is something unpronounceable, and I need you to get my money out of my country. Can I use your bank account? That is the email. It's called the Nigerian bank scam, among its Mickelson's favorites, mainly because the number of people asking about it is huge. It is impossible for the average person to figure out what is going on unless they know there is such a thing as a Nigerian scam, which at the time I didn't. For one, the backstory changes constantly to reflect current events. Expect a new variation every time a foreign leader dies or is deposed. Presently, Yasser Arafat's widow is supposedly seeking to help move his secret bank account out of enemy hands, and the sergeant who found Saddam Hussein's hidden gold wants help keeping it out of insurgents' hands also. So, yeah, don't give out your information to people you don't know. I'm sorry. I can't believe it's not obvious, but yeah, there are no get-rich-quick schemes. I'm sorry, folks. It doesn't happen that way. And if it does, let me coin the adage, easy come, easy go. It is statistically proven that almost 9 out of 10 people that win the lottery and have a significant financial windfall are either broke or dead the next year because they didn't know how to handle it. So just stay away from those kind of scams. Myth number eight, you can now opt out of having credit bureaus give your information to anyone who asks. Just call them and give them the social security numbers of everybody in the household. But hurry, you only have 60 days. Oh, my God. Can you say fraud in a box, please? The credit bureaus are having a tough time because they're working hard to debunk this one, but you've got to get people to stop calling this number. All it does is connect you to an operator who can help you opt out of receiving pre-approved credit card offers. But they're not allowed to give credit information out anyway, so it's a non-issue. If you're not familiar with how pre-approved credit card issues, pre-approved credit card marketing things work, it's very simple. Somebody says, I want to buy a certain zip code or a certain income demographic and based on whatever you've reported, or a certain credit profile, somebody who's had a mortgage for at least 2 years, or somebody who's defaulted on a student loan, or whatever it is. So they don't know specifically about your credit, okay? They've never pulled your credit. They don't know what your score is. They're just merely marketing to you. So you need to be extremely careful about this. Myth number 9, this is a great one. Buy your way out of points on a speeding ticket. This myth says that if you pay a bit more for your fine than what it actually is, the state will send you a refund check for the difference, and as long as you don't cash it, they can't assess the points because the transaction technically isn't complete. Well, it's totally garbage. This started from a popular email from Australia, so maybe it works there, but here in the U.S., trust me, as a person that has collected enough points in her lifetime, it don't work that way. And myth number 10, the Divine Lord's hotel Bibles often have $100 bills tucked in them. This started the saying that, you know, the Gideons that leave the Bibles everywhere, that they're also leaving $100 bills to reward the folks who actually open it up. Well, let me tell you, I've opened up several. I've never seen $1, not even $100, but let alone $1. So while that would be nice that you'd be rewarded for looking up some psalms, reciting a few lines and verses from the Bible, it just ain't going to happen. So, folks, those are your 10 urban legends about finance, and I thought that those were pretty funny, so I thought I'd bring that to you for Money May. Again, for those of you that are interested in receiving your Money May text message a day about financial tips, news, and information pertinent to you in making your road to financial independence a fairly smooth and shorter distanced one than if you were on your own, please see your contact information or update your preferences on your eZine subscription, eZine at unlockyourwealth.com, or just surf over on the web to www.unlockyourwealth.com and sign up. And on to the key to riches. This week's key, knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful. For those of you that are just joining us for the first time, the keys to riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but it also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. Now, we're on key 4. 3 keys ago when we had Mac Newton on for the broadcast, and we were taking action and making assessment of our finances. We should be through a couple of pay periods so far, but are not through with a whole month of collecting receipts. For those of you that have been doing that, continue to do so. It is super important because we're coming in to our break the budget key up shortly in the next couple weeks, and we are going to talk about what to do with all of that data that we've gathered about ourselves. And it's going to blow you away when you can sit and look at firsthand where you are with your money. But this week is no less important because knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful, is quintessential to your financial success. And I say this, and Mr. Burnoff today kind of reiterated the importance of it, and that is just because you know something doesn't mean it's going to make a difference in your life. He says knowledge is power when it's applied. So what we're going to do is take another short assessment, and this one won't nearly be as long. But there's so much for us to know about money and finance and how to exist financially, not just propel ourselves to financial independence. That's a whole other ball of wax, but just to exist financially as an adult. You know, we have to pay bills. We have to use checking and savings. If we don't want to carry cash, we use credit cards and debit cards to facilitate transactions. It's super important that we know what our money is doing. However, based on the fact that we live life, we are sons, daughters, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, and parents, and aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews. So life is happening. We have to work. We have to generate income. And by golly, by the time we come home, create dinner after everybody's soccer matches and tennis lessons, and then, you know, sitting there going over the finances with your spouse or better half, you're going to sit there and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. And now it's bedtime and you don't have time to go find out either. So the point of this week's key is let's take a look at what we know and what we don't know, and what we do know, work hard at, and what we don't know, we delegate. It's that simple. You know, that's one of the keys that my husband always speaks about, and we talked about it briefly on last week's show, if you want to download that episode again, is that you've got to be able to identify what you know. And he always says, I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. And you know what? He did not know everything there was to know about building a $400 million a year company. But what he did know is that for the things he lacked knowledge in, there was no way a lifetime of learning could have ramped them up for each of those particular segments. So instead of trying to figure out how to absorb that information by sleeping with a bunch of textbooks, he just sought out people that were experts in those areas to fill that gap. And that's so simple. Yet it's a concept that seems so foreign to us, but really it's not. And delegation is a tough thing, let me tell you, because you worry, did I delegate to the right person? What if it doesn't get done? And, you know, then, you know, I've got my mother's mantra. If it's meant to be, it's up to me. If it's meant to be, it's up to me. But that doesn't mean that I have to do everything. It just means that I have to have the vision and the plan and be the one, first one to take action and employ others and get them to follow me in my mission and vision. And that is how I can be truly effective. And you can too. So what we're going to do, and you can do this later on today or tomorrow, this is part of our action item this week, is that we're going to take assessment and we're going to list the things that we are familiar with. We understand how insurance works. We understand how to balance our checkbook, but we don't know how to pick stocks. We don't know how to buy real estate. And we're going to list all the things that we do know in one column and all the things that we don't know in another, and we are going to then interview and seek out experts in those areas where we are blind to knowledge. It's very simple. You don't have to deal with the first person you know. Just because your Uncle Eddie is a part-time stockbroker while he manages his plumbing business doesn't mean you are obligated to invest with him. Do your homework. Interview people. Gather as much information as a layperson you can, and find the person that feels comfortable and wants to support your goals, not somebody that wants you to invest in their goals for their benefit, but is truly concerned about what's important to you. If you can't balance your checkbook, get a bookkeeper. Give them all your bills. Let them write the checks, and then they give you an allowance. Whatever it takes to get you to focus on what you do best, because the key here is to be able to figure out and focus on our strengths, because the more we focus on and develop our strengths, the less time it takes us to do things and the more time we have to enjoy with our friends and family. And financial independence isn't about sitting around fretting all day about your money. It's about creating more opportunities to do the things you love and spend time with the people that matter most. So today's key statement is, I know that I don't have to know everything about money. I just have to address the things I don't know by delegating to professionals. Our key affirmation is, I am great at assessing my strengths and delegating my weaknesses. And your action item for the week is to sit down and list your strengths and weaknesses. If you'd like a worksheet, send me an email. Sign up to the eZine. It's very simple. eZine@unlockyourwealth.com. Please visit the website and sign up for your text message a day for Money May. And we have an incredible show coming up next week with our fifth key, take emotion out of the picture. Thanks for all who started and participated in our live chat session simultaneously with the broadcast. Thanks to Tony Stewart for stopping by, and have a great week. I'm Heather Wagenhals, and you're listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America is the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.